the hang on been lifted?
We are live online if you would like to start.
All right. And Janine, we're ready. All right, so we will go ahead and bring back to the commission. Get the correct number here. Kidder Creek Orchard Camp Zone Change, Z1401, and use permit UP1115. It's MMRP and mitigation measures. At the January Planning Commission meeting, as the acting chair at the time, we closed the public hearing and had taken it to the commission, which is item K under the protocol, as there have been no changes to the project. While we have received additional comments, those are noted and will be included with the packet. However, whatever form it shall traverse back to the supervisors. But the purpose of the continuance was to get several key individuals from the county, Public Works. Mr. Parker, what technically is your title? Are you Natural Resources still?
Yes.
Okay. Natural Resources, CAL FIRE, for specific pointed questions that we as the commissioners have related to the five items that the supervisors tasked us with addressing. So,
which are?
They are fire, water, road. Help me out here, Commissioner Hart. They're on the
biological resources.
Biological resources and
incorporation of the MMRP.
Thank you. The MMRP. So, Commissioner Hart, while absent at the last commissioner meeting, has listened to all the audio tape, I believe, more than once, and has gone through all of the correspondence. And I believe you also communicated with staff individuals that you wanted here. So at this time, we are reconvening. It is here on the commission. Who would like to go first with questions for the individuals that we have requested to be here today?
Are we limited to those areas?
You can ask questions of staff, yeah, right. Anyone, but we're continuing at the point where it's here for the commission to discuss.
Through the chair.
Yes.
I just wanted to note that Jamie Allen is on the Zoom call, and he is the individual that completed the biological resource portion of the document. Should you
that's
have any questions for
Jamie
him?
Jamie Allen?
Jamie Allen,
and
yes.
That's for the biological? Thank you.
Correct.
Okay.
One question I have.
Go ahead.
The question I have is traffic, you know, and you, when I looked at the traffic, it seemed like the only concern was noise. I didn't see congestion being a part of the environmental problem with traffic. And it makes me wonder, if we're all electric cars, then is traffic not ever a problem anymore? I mean, if is there other thing other than noise,
mm-hmm.
can traffic become a environmental concern if it's just the number of cars, increasing the number of cars with that?
Correct, yeah. So through the analysis, it was noted that the noise generated from the traffic at the 844 number was a significant and unavoidable impact. And then as you all remember, that is why the Planning Commission recommended to reduce that occupancy number to 622, otherwise we're calling it Project Alternative Number 4, because that reduced the noise impact, thus reducing the overall transportation impact to not unavoidable and significant, but potentially significant with the incorporation of mitigation measures.
So, if they were all electric cars,
have you reduced the noise level?
That is a good question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Anyway, that's okay. You don't need to answer. I'm just wondering, we always talk about traffic regarding noise, but there are problems with too much traffic, it's congestion and accidents and so on. So,
but that was one of my questions.
Go ahead. You have the floor. Are you pondering another one?
No.
Before I go to Commissioner Hart?
No, I'm not.
Okay, then I will turn to Commissioner Hart then.
My question is to staff. The Board of Supervisors took this up 1st of January, and when that item came up, were you able to give a complete presentation of this project in public hearing for the Board of Supervisors?
No, I provided a general overview of the project, not a complete.
My question is, how are we back to here? What was the legal process they went through to send this back to us?
So, staff, I presented, like I mentioned, the general.
They had to take an action.
Yes,
to send
they did
it back
have to vote.
Us.
They unanimously voted. So, what happened during that meeting was I presented a general presentation. They opened up the public hearing. They heard public comment from the folks that were there. They closed the public hearing, had a brief discussion, and voted unanimously to send it back to Planning Commission for the commission to further clarify those five issues that or concerns that they had had at that time.
Okay. I'd like the CAL FIRE guys up here at the mic, please. Since that's the first item we're going to deal with here. So when the Planning Commission took this up in November, we sent it to the Board of Supervisors. They sent it back to us for further clarification. When we voted on this, when I voted on it, I was of the understanding that this project met all CAL FIRE regulations, period. Correct?
Correct.
The Board of Supervisors obviously didn't buy that. So somebody please enlighten me where the discrepancy is here.
I'll address that, Ricky, Community Development Director. Everything presented as far as CAL FIRE goes was done and accepted. Board of Supervisors wanted to also involve the Office of Emergency Services to take a look at their evacuation plan. As part of the fire aspect, which was done by Brian Cignoni, our Office of Emergency Services Director.
Right.
And he presented at the last meeting his findings and so forth.
And so that's the recommendation then that's going forward, if we send this back to the Board of Supervisors.
Yes, so that was the additional clarification, if you will, or evaluation of the plan that they had. He made his comments. There was concern with a fire coming from Cheeseville affecting Kidder Creek.
Right.
That was addressed through modeling. The CAL FIRE had already done, and we visited with Mr. Cignoni and CAL FIRE.
Okay, so.
Did the supervisors see that modeling in their packet?
They had access to it, whether they looked at it or not, but the full report that was presented by Kidder Creek Orchard Camp the fire analysis within it was at the previous meeting.
Okay, but it was not part of staff's presentation?
Correct.
So before we move further and we're on fire, I would strenuously suggest that when staff, and Ms. Lang, I'm guessing you're going to be the presenter, you include the modeling and the testimony which CAL FIRE so graciously spent their time in December in front of us sharing, make sure that is adequately, properly, and succinctly relayed to the supervisors.
Yep.
Continue.
All right, so what legal threshold or authority does the Planning Commission have to require stronger fire regulations and what CAL FIRE has? Can we add to what they have the state fire code?
Within the 4290 regulations, I believe it's item D, there is some latitude for additional information there, for additional concerns to be raised.
I don't remember ever done that for any project in my tenure.
Which has been a long time.
Well.
It's a subsection of 4290.
We did have one where we required tankers on a project for us to approve it, but then the supervisors thumbed their nose at us and said, no.
Through the chair. And related to this issue, I just want to add, for 4290, I believe how the regulation is written is the local fire warden is allowed to impose additional requirements should they see fit. So that's not, you know, planning commission, that's.
So is it the CAL FIRE or is it the local over there?
So I would say that counties have the ability to adopt 4290. Siskiyou County has not adopted 4290, and so they refer back to CAL FIRE for recommendations regarding 4290. There is a caveat, like was said, that restrictions can be imposed by the local jurisdiction, as far as the county could impose further fire safe regulations if they so choose to. And I would say that the county fire warden, you know, makes recommendations to the board. That's their position. And so if there was additional recommendations or questions, we could answer those and make those recommendations. I don't believe there are any at this point.
Good question. So on this topic, as it relates to KCOC, the LEA for KCOC, is it CAL FIRE or is it volunteer?
What is the LEA?
The lead enforcement agency. First response, is it, are they part of the CAL FIRE state response area or are they volunteer?
They are both. So
mixed?
Correct. So okay. They're within Scott Valley Fire Protection District. However, the lands fall within state responsibility area. So CAL FIRE is responsible for the wildland portion of that area. The local jurisdiction is responsible for the medical aid structure fires, etc., in that area.
Okay, so in times where inspections are needed to be performed, do you work in concert with Scott Valley Fire Protection, or do they take lead and consult you, or do you take lead and consult them?
It would be what specific inspections you'd be referring to.
Okay, we're talking 4291 regs for making sure that structures have the proper setbacks.
CAL FIRE would be the lead in that.
Okay. Potential fuel load reduction needs.
CAL FIRE.
Okay. Continue.
Back to the modeling. And I'm going back 2 years when the Planning Commission turned down the Shasta Psytrance Music Festival in Alder Creek. And it went because of fires, health and safety. Because of the location where it was at. The roads didn't meet 4290 regulations, not even close. It went to Board of Supervisors and they approved it without going to the extra step of doing the modeling. What's changed? Because there you have a project where they're going to have a music festival 2 to 3 times a year with a large gathering of people, lots of cars, with basically one road in and out of there, it's a Jeep road. I'm trying to understand why we've gone from that standard to this standard. What's, anybody enlighten me about what the thinking is here?
So I obviously I wasn't here at that time, I believe for that project, there was no CEQA document that was created, correct? It was this categorical exemption for that use permit, correct? So that might have played into it, considering that this project also had to be evaluated by CEQA, has gone through the process to create an environmental document. You know, wildfire is something that has to be considered under CEQA and analyzed. So potentially that could have been a good reason for why you're seeing more detailed analysis related to wildfire, because this is not something that is being categorically exempted.
So you're saying the first one's categorically exempt?
I believe so, yes.
And yet that antelope fire came right down to that pond on that property. I spent 2 months with these guys. And actually, we prevailed in getting this group in charge of that Delta section, and they got the fire put out and stopped.
At the camp? Were they at the camp?
What's that?
Were they at the camp?
Yeah, the fire came right down to it.
Yeah, but I know. Was Cal Fire at the camp when the fire came down?
No, it came down the ridge.
But they weren't there. They were
no,
in Canada.
There wasn't anybody there because they didn't have the use permit. Perfected yet.
I was just curious.
No, I'm just trying to get
it. It was a miracle.
I'm trying to understand why we took a project with a great number of people, a great number of vehicles, on a road that they had to meet conditions to. Again, back to this ingress, egress. They didn't have a right-of-way in there over other private landowners' land, even though it's a co-op road, the Forest Service and Industrial Timber. I'm this firm, fair, and consistent. I'm not seeing that here, where we're requiring additional analysis because of the liability issue. I don't see any difference in the two projects. It's just my own personal opinion, and I'm trying to understand why they want that to happen here. Because, you know, I drove into that weed fire here last summer, and I stopped 100 yards short of it going across Toy Road. The devastation can be absolutely incredible. So I fully understand everybody's hesitancy about that, and that's got the potential, at least in my mind it does. So
I would note on just to add a couple things, if I may, for the modeling. As far as our site, we didn't have the modeling available at the time before, and now we do. And so, though it's not a requirement, the ask is more readily available for us to produce. I would also say with the modeling, as I stated, I believe in the last meeting with you guys, is that that modeling doesn't put in suppression efforts into it at all. It's solely based on weather conditions, winds, etc., which you know can be very dynamic in this county, and therefore you can make the program do whatever you want it to do. So we try to produce some models of different start areas with some relative weather, basically a normal day, a more active day, and the worst case scenario in the models that we provided previous.
Go ahead.
You're done with questions. Yeah. I have a couple questions for them while we have them up here. I'll jump in. So question number one, and this is for to get the information out. Does Cal Fire work with landowners to develop fuel load reduction plans?
Yes.
In your expert opinion, would it be beneficial for KCOC to develop a fuel load reduction plan on their property, specifically in the wildland area?
Yes, and I believe that they have already started that. And I could, if you'd like us to expand on it, I could refer to the Scott Bolling Battalion Chief, who's been working with them on those type of things.
for additional information, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Jake Burgess, Cal Fire Assist, I'm the Scott Valley Battalion Chief. We've been working closely with Kidder Creek Camp on a plan. Also, Forester Jeremy Ravenscroft has worked really closely on that plan, both a 1 year all the way through a 5 year plan for new treatments, maintenance down the road, future broadcast burn projects. We have been working actively with them.
Okay, and so since you are the point person working with them, so everyone is on the same page, you have been working on developing the plan. Is the plan complete? If not, how long till the plan has been completed and implementation can begin?
So I have been a point of reference for them, a subject matter expert. They're the ones developing the plan and we are assisting, and Jeremy Ravenscroft has been the main point of contact actually for that plan. You'd have to ask Kidder Creek Camp where that plan stands. I've seen graphs of it through their timber harvest plan, but I can't tell you if it's going to be or not.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll do that. Go ahead.
Those were the two key questions I had for Cal Fire.
What's that?
Those were my key questions for Cal Fire.
The only other question is the emergency access route out. There's been some discussion.
Let me head down that path because this is partially 4290, partially beyond where I think I'll probably bring in council on this, going back to the previous project. On the emergency ingress egress with the breakaway gates that exits via Patterson Creek, does it currently meet 4290 regs on the Kidder Creek property?
I don't believe so. My understanding is that roadway is still being construction. Under construction, that would be a term of the occupancy or whatever, increasing that roadway be complete before they're able to do that.
Okay.
I can speak to that one more if you'd like a little bit.
Please.
So we met with Kidder Creek Camp. We actually surveyed and went and looked at the road. The gate is in place. There's an additional gate that they don't have access through, so we looked at an alternate route that would be a condition of approval for 4290, and it's a viable route.
Okay. Now,
just to add that gate, I believe a condition of the permit was also that gate be unlocked or have some sort of breakaway device when the camp was occupied.
Yes, thank you. Now, for council, here's my question for you. So we have in as condition for approval that the emergency evacuation route through Patterson Creek, one, must meet 4290 regs. Still being improved, is not to that point. We have a gate that's being worked on. It's understood it must meet 4290 before the permit is validated. My question for you, I am familiar with the route of that road. Are we within our legal purview as the Planning Commission, and should we send this on supervisors, being familiar with that route and reading in the documentation that KCOC recognizes that to be an evacuation route also for their livestock, in this particular case, horses. 4290 regs may be great for engines, but a loaded 30-foot gooseneck full of horses on the back of a pickup, 4290 does not meet the requirements for an orderly, safe exit. Can we place conditions that the road must be safe and passable for X long axle, X long trailer on the evacuation route?
Well, the conditions would have to be fulfillable by the applicant. I'm assuming if they're doing work on the road, in doing it, it's reasonable to ask that as a condition. It's not directly on the property, but to the extent they apparently have an agreement to be work upon the road, that it seems like a possible condition to have, yes.
Okay, so I'm writing down questions for when we bring one of the representatives from KCOC up here.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Does Kidder Creek Road qualify for 4290 regulation? It's south.
Your chief is right there.
Yes.
he's one.
So like we said before, the last time we met, when permits are applied for, it kind of locks them into those regulations so that, you know, if you're a homeowner building a house and those regulations changes, you don't have to constantly update what you're doing, or maybe your plan would be null and void because it no longer meets those regulations. So at the time of the permit, when it was submitted for back in, I believe, 2014, it does meet the roadway requirements of 2014.
But today?
Today's requirements, it would not meet the 4290 requirements because they became much more restrictive.
So are we dealing with today's?
We have to deal with 2014 because that's the law that's in front of us.
Correct.
Okay,
so
I'm good with Cal Fire's question.
Okay, back to the fire road or the escape route. KCOC does not own the entire road.
Correct.
Owned by other property owners.
Correct.
Is there a permanent recorded easement?
That's one of my questions for when we bring them up after we're done with Cal Fire.
We can't go again. We're right back where we just wrestled with earlier this morning.
Right.
About doing that. So
correct.
If we can't get there, then the project's dead.
Correct.
And I would add that that was a requirement the Cal Fire put in there, that it was deeded access.
Any other questions for Cal Fire?
No.
Not at this point.
No. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Hart, who would you like to call up next?
Let's deal with the pond. Number two. And I'm not sure who's going to tackle this one. And again, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this evaporation study as to why we're getting into this. And if they're using their legal water right,
so I'm asking a question for clarification. Mr. Pearson or Mr. Cummins, which one of you is the ET guy? Mr. Cummins is. Okay.
All right. So, and again, I'm coming back because I wasn't here, and I read through all of this, and I'm still trying to wrap my mind around where the Planning Commission is getting involved in someone's water right off of Kidder Creek. It's under the jurisdiction of the Assistant Superior Court and the State Water Board. We don't have any say in that, in how they use that water, where they apply it. That lies with the water board, period. So the study of the evaporation on that pond, again, I don't see where we have jurisdiction over that legally. And if they're using their water in the legal right that they have, it's defined under the court decree, why are we wading into the middle?
So, here's a question. See if I can ask this. And I'm going to split this question between the two of you. The first question, and it was one that kind of raised a flag for me. Why do we even care what the ET rate is for this pond? For this project,
from a project standpoint, it was a question that we were asked to answer at the time.
Why?
Why? What's the legal basis for that?
So it came from someone else through comments and so forth.
I'm looking at the CEQA checklist.
Right.
Of what staff has to go through and all the different items that are there. Water rights are not one of them. Water quality is.
Right.
And as long as they're diverting off of Kidder Creek, taking their legal water right, what happens after that point of diversion? As long as they're not polluting the groundwater with that diversion, I don't see where we have any jurisdiction at all to be wading into the ET of that pond or how it's used on that property, that water used on that property. Am I wrong?
Haley, you're chomping at the bit.
No, you're not wrong. I just wanted to also note, I believe the reason why this whole entire study was authored, again, this was before a recognized time, was during the scoping meeting of the EIR, there were so many comments that were raised related to groundwater, and staff at the time had decided to add on and tack on this additional technical study to, you know, further clarify and, you know, let the public know of that potential impact due to there being a high amount of comments related to that. But again, that was a decision.
So to be clear,
prior,
the question or questions that were being asked during scoping were questions from the public, not requirements from the CEQA checklist.
Correct.
So why are we addressing them? Our responsibility to the Planning Commission is to ensure what's on that CEQA checklist and whatever the resource issue is, mm-hmm. it's either high, medium, or low. And then each one of those items, particularly if it's high, mm-hmm. has to be addressed
and mitigated
with a mitigation measure.
Right.
So that's why I'm questioning, why are we even spending time looking at somebody else's, the water right on this project right. lies with the property, period, regardless. And right. so how they use it, as long as they're using it under the decreed right that they were given, mm-hmm. I don't see why we're even going down this road.
I agree. I don't know why, you know, previous staff had made that determination.
Counsel, please.
Sure. First of all, Commissioner Hart, I agree with your comments about how deep it appears, including public comment, how deep it seems to getting the water rights, which is
not in our purview.
Well, not in your purview. You know, my big picture, right or wrong, and I would actually be happy to Kidder Creek correctly because it's important for me to understand, is that by their water rights letter that I read, it's in the record, that they have pre-1914 appropriation rights. And thus there's not a direct right by the SWRCD to regulate the point of diversion and point of use. What does control is the Scott River Decree as to how much they can use. To irrigate 37 acres and can't remember what the flow rate is. But that's, if I understand correctly, that's the general parameters of their water rights. And again, if Kidder Creek wants to correct me, please do, because I want to make sure I understand. It's my understanding.
Through the chair.
If, Mr. Carroll, are you done?
No. As pertains, though, to the pond, though, because I kind of digressed there, as pertains to the pond, I understand that the concern was from the board, or from one of the supervisors at least, whether activities should be considered reduced in Kidder Creek Camp if and when the pond happens to get too low to be usable for whatever water activities they had. So perhaps it's a very fine tuning, but that was the one concern I could see regarding the evaporation rates, which is the pond still viable for recreational use, and if not, should participation in the camp drop therefore?
Okay, but now with that statement, and then I'll get to you, Rachel. what business is it of the county to make management decisions for a business?
I'll take that as a rhetorical question.
Okay. Rachel.
The applicant's environmental attorney is online and would like to make a comment regarding this.
On this specific topic?
Water rights, yes.
Okay, and what is their name?
Ms. Jennifer Buckman.
Okay, on the topic that we are discussing, Ms. Buckman.
Battery 100%.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Planning Commissioners. I agree with County Council's assessment of the water rights opinion letter that's in the record. The State Water Board does not actually have jurisdiction over the water rights that the camp's owner holds under the Scott River Decree because they are pre-14 appropriative rights and is some combination of riparian rights. So it does not belong to the State Water Board, and we would agree with the commissioner's comment just now that the possibility of evaporation from the pond is a management decision related to its recreational use, not a water rights issue for the commission to be taking up.
Thank you. Okay. So, since you started us on the pond,
I'm still hung up on why we're getting in the middle of this.
Okay, I'm going for clarification here with whether it be staff or council, Mr. Cummings, or Ms. Buckman. And I think I may be asking Mr. Parker to come up here rather quickly, but let me see if my question leads down that path. Pre-1914, in the decree, the county does not dictate use of that water right, period. The commission, / supervisors, and council, correct me, two councilors, correct me if I'm wrong, the one thing we can look at is that whether or not the project would or could reasonably negatively impact a downstream water right holder on Barker Ditch. But in this particular case, we have within the report that the downstream water right holders are in favor of this project. So therefore, that one component can be checked off and set aside. Is there any other reason why we as a county planning commission, and I'll even lump in when this, should this go forward to the supervisors, we look at the legality of everything, they look at the politics of it, but there's no reason else why we should be looking at the pond.
That's right.
I think you're correct. I mean, we don't have anything to say about the legal right for them to use the water, other than we want to make sure that there may be some basis for it. But certainly looking at the environmental effects of their right of use of water as pertains to this project and that affects other property owners is certainly within the purview of this planning.
Okay, so now, Mr. Carroll, you've opened the door. Mr. Parker, would you please come up? As our expert present in this room for the Scott River GSA-GSP, as it relates to Sigma, how or what relationship does the Scott River GSA GSP have with the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp project. Is there any connectivity? Is there any relationship that the GSA would look at as it relates to the GSP in what they may be limited to doing or not limited to doing?
So from my understanding with SGMA is that the GSPs, being that we're in implementation right now, any body such as the Planning Commission would have to take into account that you implemented the GSP. So you're doing that right now. It requires coordination with the GSA.
Okay, so let me hold off for clarification for those that aren't familiar. The county has submitted the GSP to the state.
Technically, it's the flood control district.
Okay.
A sub-body flood, or whatnot of
right.
The Board of Supervisors, correct.
And our county, the flood control district, is the Board of Supervisors.
The Board of Supervisors sits as the Board of Directors on the flood control district.
Okay. So I wanted to be clear because you said, yes, we are talking about it,
yeah.
But we are not, as the Planning Commission, the GSA.
Correct.
That is the supervisor / flood control district at this point in time.
Correct.
Okay, continue.
So, you know, it would be the commission, and I guess planning to, under a project such as this, to take a look at the GSP and coordinate with the GSA on whether a proposed project would conflict with the GSP itself.
And to your knowledge and my knowledge, since I have read that the document that was sent in more times than I care to remember, does this project, is the project area of KCOC included in the GSP?
Yes, it's within the Scott Valley Basin.
Are the measures mentioned in the GSP applicable to KCOC as it was submitted to the state?
I guess further define what you mean by measures.
Within the GSP, there are recommendations, quote unquote, projects to mitigate negative impacts to groundwater depletion in the Scott River watershed, Scott River Basin. As it relates to the KCOC, do you see a relationship with the activities at KCOC and the GSP?
If you're asking is there a conflict, I would say no.
Okay.
We have the attorney with her hand up again, if you'd like to let her speak.
Oh, on the... By all means, on this one, yes, I was going to turn to their attorney on this for her perspective. Go ahead, Ms. Buckman.
Hi. So regarding the GSP, on page 87, I'm sorry, page 85, PDF page 87 of chapter 2, it indicates that there is no groundwater overdraft in the sub-portion of the Scott Valley River Basin that we're here. Creek Camp is located. And if you also want to look at the executive summary of the GSP, paragraph 2, page 4 indicates that the streams in the upper tributaries contribute to the groundwater so that there's not going to be an issue with the groundwater, the additional groundwater well coming online as part of this project would not cause any significant amount of water supply issue. I would also refer you to the executive summary, pages 4 to 6, which starts at PDF page 6, for the proposition that there are no significant long-term trends in water levels noted during the period of study, which was approximately 40 years, meaning that the groundwater levels in this area have been stable for approximately 40 years. And just a point of fact, in the groundwater study that they did for the camp, the depth to groundwater is only about 20 feet. So it's obviously very shallow, recharges very quickly. Do you have any questions for me?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Parker before I turn my next line of questions to council?
You're only proposing one well, which is a domestic well.
Correct.
All right. What's the definition of the use of a domestic well, staff? And the reason I'm asking that,
well, use the domestic
well, because of the subdivision I've got right behind to the south of my ranch, where there are numerous gardens growing in hothouses and a whole bunch of other stuff. Those are all domestic wells. And under groundwater law, domestic wells are exempt as long as they don't pump more than 2 acre feet, period. And since we don't have meters on everybody's wells out here, on domestic wells, I'm asking what's the legal use of a domestic well?
Your exempt
IE well. Growing, can you use it to operate a hothouse?
They're exempt from what, you said?
What's that?
You said they're exempt.
They're exempt as long as they don't use more than 2 acre feet.
Right.
How do we know how much they're using? Mm-hmm. So, question.
I'm not going to be able to go this verbatim, but there's a specific definition for a domestic well, ag well, down the line.
Right.
And Mr. Lynn Pearson may be able to bring more detail to it. But essentially, a domestic well is to provide water to a residential home. They utilize for water within the house, bathing, showering, water consumption, etc. And also for gardening and so forth. Irrigation of the lawn, basically, in a nutshell, is the definition used for domestic use. The 2 acre maximum is something that's been brought in new. Right? Uh-huh. It's not something to the past. It was a defined a definition piece for a domestic well until with the recent executive order from the governor, uh-huh. which basically put a 2 acre minimum cap per annum on domestic use water, and also it appeared with the state water board curtailments that occurred, which all have received letters for not to exceed that.
The reason I'm bringing this up is because there's been mention here and concern that as the flow goes down in Kittercreek, the volume of water that's available to the camp for irrigating their property and for the pollen, that this domestic well is going to be used to add to that. Is there a restriction against that?
Yes, as a domestic well, if someone is supposed to apply for a domestic well permit, it would be utilized for domestic purposes. It would not be utilized to supplement the pump, as you mentioned. It's by definition of the permit.
Okay. So when the pond runs out of water, it runs out of water. Correct. Is the creek went dry?
Yeah.
Period.
You cannot legally use that groundwater to augment water.
Because I'm looking at the comments from people downslope who are concerned that their water supply is going to go down because of an additional well. And that hasn't been proven the case yet from the environmental review done by the consultant hired by the county.
I'd leave that to Mr. Pearson to answer, because I think he did address that issue.
Okay. So, Mr. Parker, before you think you can leave the podium, that you may, this may be a question that you need to answer. It could be council, it could be Mr. Dean or Ms. Lang. The governor's most recent edict from his pulpit, which places a moratorium on all new wells, unless, if I get this wording correctly, unless the well has met with approval by the GSA responsible for its location and essentially falls within the parameters of the GSP, it cannot be drilled. So we have a project here, and so that's why I'm looking at all four of you. You can jump in here when I'm done. We're in a situation where the county has submitted the GSP for approval to the state and are waiting. Our functioning GSA essentially is the Board of Supervisors / Flood Control District. With this edict, are the supervisors / Flood Control District now viewing every new well permit in Siskiyou County?